Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
DC Universe premiered probably its best show yet. Absolutely phenomenal. We're talking about the first episode of Doom Patrol that I'm calling Larry Trainer because it's the pilot. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Everybody, welcome to the AfterBuzz TV after show for Doom Patrol.
Oh my god.
We're talking about the first episode of Doom Patrol. I'm your host, Elena Jordan. Joining me today...
Hey guys, I'm Ollie Drennan. I'm super excited to be here with you.
And we're also very excited because Tayron is going to be joining us as well. He's not here tonight, but he'll be joining the panel. We'll have our own Doom Patrol holding it down. So this episode, the pilot kicking us off... I think this was a pretty phenomenal episode. What did you think? First thoughts.
I really just like ensemble pieces. Like, I'm always going for, like, the group. I don't want to go for, like, a series that's just on, like, one character. And I feel like this is, it's such a good, like, to have the ensemble, you need to have it be a series, not a film. So I'm super excited. And I'm already, like, hooked. I'm like, this is the dark, gritty, like, but also, like, comedic tone that I'm looking for. So it's awesome so far.
I think they just knocked this one out of the park. I think this is going to be the show that gets people logging on, downloading the app, getting the streaming service, because I feel like Titans was pretty good. This is kind of like a little spinoff of Titans, but you don't have to know anything about Titans. If you haven't ever watched it, don't worry about it. You don't need to know it to watch Doom Patrol. It was kind of cool seeing, you know, some of the same characters that we've seen introduced, but... Whereas I think Titans maybe lost some audiences with some of its marketing early on. If this episode is any indicator of the rest of the season, they have gotten it together.
Definitely.
This is like, this might be my favorite DC pilot.
Oh, really? No, it's definitely mine. Because, like, for sure, I was a little disappointed with Titans. And also, I'm not really a fan of any of the CW ones. So this is finally, like, I am, like, team DC right now. So it's really cool.
I like the CW ones. But I will say the nice thing about this one is it seems because it's made specifically for the streaming app, there is 13 episodes. It's set... I don't think there's going to be too much filler.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited about. This was a very action-packed pilot, man.
I know. It was it was like an hour.
It was an hour.
And I love that it's like, I don't think it's rated. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, they can just do like whatever they want with this.
They can do whatever.
Feels like an actual comic book to me.
F-bombs like, left and right all over the place.
we saw some booty, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really surprised. I was like,
booty,
okay.
Booty, booty,
Doom Patrol's going there, right? Okay.
Now, I have to say, too, I loved that the setup of this was that it was narrated by the villain, Mr. Nobody, Eric Morden, who Alan Tudyk is just absolutely phenomenal. I was a little nervous at first because his performance is so fantastic. I was hoping everybody else would be able to match that bar. I feel like they matched, maybe even exceeded it.
Oh, wow.
Really? Just the casting of this show, I think, is pretty phenomenal. What did you think about Mr. Morden's introduction and having it being this almost... like Deadpool-esque breaking the fourth wall.
Oh my god, it felt, I love that. It's totally what it felt like, but also it was almost like I saw it as kind of like the puppet master, like everyone's just kind of like, he's just like controlling everything and no one really suspects anything. And I'm just really, I'm a little terrified, but I'm also very intrigued where he's gonna go with this. So it's, I'm totally here for it.
It's interesting too that they're already playing with the whole superhero dynamic and pointing out, you know, this is a story that's been told a thousand times, like, you know, but this is the interesting twist on it.
Yeah.
That Mr. Nobody kind of feels the same dejection that these heroes are kind of feeling. And we see it going all the way back, like Paraguay, 1948. This, what did you feel about having the structure of this one and having it broken up into almost the different storylines and the backstories for each of these characters?
I really liked it because I feel like everyone kind of got like their 10-minute like arc a little bit to just, or maybe not 10-minute, but like rough comparison. But like, that's kind of what I thought they, like, not to bring up Suicide Squad. I love Suicide, like some of the performances in there, but I think like this is the way to do it. Like I said earlier, like you need to have the series in order to introduce your characters and give them the proper development, because the characters in Suicide Squad in the comics, like they're so complex. They need that time to build up their character arcs, who they are. We need to get behind them, you know? And I'm really thinking like Doom Patrol is doing it really, doing it justice. And like, we didn't even get to see all the characters yet.
It's doing it justice, but not justice.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you though. I feel like this is definitely a story that I think will be a little bit more fleshed out because it's a series. Whereas Suicide Squad, I think, felt like they had to combine a lot of different story into a very short amount of time.
Exactly.
But this was pretty impressive. I mean, this felt like it was almost a full-length features worth of plot in 1 hour.
Absolutely.
Kind of diving into the different characters, we first get Florida 1988, kind of our eyes through this, our robotic eyes through this, Cliff Steele, Who would imagine a one called Steel would become a robot man?
I love
that all of these two just have like little allusions.
I'm hoping we get more puns though. We need some puns with this.
I am all about the puns.
Yeah.
I live
Bring them
for
on.
The puns.
Bring them on, Doom
I'm
Patrol.
I'm DC's Punisher. Marvel's Punisher's got guns. DC's Punisher's got puns, baby.
Love it.
But yeah, I thought this was a really interesting idea of kind of taking Cliff's storyline and introducing it as if Cliff dies because of this race car accident.
Yeah.
And then in actuality, we find out that it wasn't the race car accident that killed him. It was him calling his wife and trying to reunite with his daughter, and then ultimately having the car crash with his family that he finds out later has been hidden from him for years and years and years. This was, I mean,
that
really
was wild. Heartbreaking almost.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Cliff, to me, when we first, his origin story, is like a D-bag, you know? I feel like, especially him being like this NASCAR racer, this like kind of taking life for granted, taking his emotions, taking everything for granted, his family, his emotions, everything about his life. And they totally, I was blindsided when we found out that it happened through the accident. As you mentioned, I was like, oh my gosh, like, so this is what really happened. And so I don't know, like, I think I sympathized with his character by the end of the episode, knowing that he went to go back to reunite his family for sure.
Yeah, and just this idea that now he wants to, but he's too scared, because we even see Jane give him her phone.
Yeah.
And say, you know, this is all on the internet. Claire is still alive. You were just lied to. Niles flat out lied to you and said that she was dead to try to protect you.
Yeah.
But here, and then he, you know, almost wanting to protect himself and crushing the phone.
Like, oh, honey, I'm your father. I know I am a robot, a cyborg. What are we calling him?
Robot man,
you know, but I am indeed your father. I promise you that.
I mean, yeah, I don't know how I would react to that either.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh. All right, Dad, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to leave. And it's nice meeting you.
I did think it was weird, though, that he's like, you know, you took this chance away from me. And I'm like, I mean, but so did you. Like, you crushed the phone, bro. You could have, like, called her or been like, Jane, use your person hands, because my robot hands won't work on the iPhone, because mittens won't even work. But...
Yeah, and he obviously doesn't want to FaceTime. So
yeah,
it makes perfect sense.
FaceTime with Robot Daddy.
Not yet.
Yeah, I absolutely love this, and seeing him through his eyes of him becoming Robot Man and him discovering that only his brain is what remained, and the whole scene with him trying to use the stairs and the flashback of his daughter.
Yeah.
And I loved that really symbolic story where he's saying, my daughter, I gave her all the tools, I gave her all the resources, she could walk up the damn stairs, she just wouldn't, she just wanted my help.
Mm-hmm.
And then Larry finally being, all right, we'll just walk up the damn stairs, and then finally doing it. It was really impactful. This was a very lighthearted but really emotional episode.
Right now, exactly. And I feel like right now he has to walk up the stairs himself in order to get to where he has to be able to gain control and control his body and control, get in touch with his emotions, even though he's a robot now. So you know. Yeah. So he's a work in progress. So
definitely a work in progress.
We're rooting for you. We're rooting for you, Cliff, okay?
I was just so excited to see Brendan Fraser. I love Brendan Fraser so much. I adore him. So just as soon as he was on TV, even as like scumbag Cliff, I was like, yeah! I mean, it's not cool that you're banging the nanny, yeah, but yeah!
That was a little awkward. You know.
Giselle.
Good for Giselle, but, you know.
I'm interested to see how Clara's going to come into play later on. That'll be interesting.
I hope it's not too awkward.
One. Yeah, me too.
You know. Whoop. You know.
Now, I loved, too, that we got to have where it would jump between all of these different things, and it gave us the title so we knew what was coming up. But having a little bit on Larry Traynor, our pilot, for our pilot.
Very. Oh my gosh. I can't with you, but I'm here.
That's
for
how
it
I
as well.
Introduced the show. That's why I'm calling this one Larry Traynor, because it's called Pilot. And I was like, you know, when you have a pilot in the pilot, you got to just.
I know. And also, why are pilots? I feel like in any kind of comic form, you are probably either going to get into an accident, you're going to become a villain, or you're just going to become a hero. Like, that's just the archetype of a pilot in comics. So, as obviously, this is what happened with Larry.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. Anytime like, we see like a happens. Superhero go into a plane, we're like, this is not gonna end well for you.
Maybe it will, but it's just gonna start out
if
really
your name is Steve, just give up. Like, don't just stay away from planes. Like, at that point,
r.i.p Steve. R.I.P. Steve Trevor.
We'll get back to DC. But yeah, I loved having Larry the Mr. Negative and him, you know, tending to his garden and his we didn't get too much of his backstory, just a little bit that the surprise was that he felt like a monster because of his sexuality in this time period when it was really, you know, like we showed his wife and kids, so we know that he wasn't out and you know, proud. So hopefully that will be something now that they'll explore a little bit, since I kind of teased it a little bit here, but
I'm here
show.
For this. I am here for the LGBTQIA plus community. The stories, there's so many you can tell. So I'm just like, that's like my only, I mean, that's not even like my one critique of the episode, like negative critique, because I know it's coming, you know.
A Mr.
So
negative critique?
How are you,
you
on it?
Have
she
said
is
puns.
On it, ladies
you
and gentlemen.
Have said it.
Ladies and gentlemen, she is on it, and I'm here for this.
Thank you. And I'm sorry.
No, keep them coming, please. I'm here for the puns, Punisher.
I'm hoping that because we saw this episode kind of more, even though it was narrated by Mr. Nobody, that it was kind of told more through our sympathetic character was Robot Man. So I'm hoping maybe in the future these different episodes will kind of lean more heavily the perspective of these different characters, and maybe we'll get some more on Larry, because even just Larry walking into the bar and his just really sweet, like, I'm sorry, but could I possibly order a drink? And then what would you like? And just really excited and proud. Like, I've left the house for the first time in so many years. I'm out here. People are staring and I don't even care. I want a beer.
Because honestly, that's honestly, I love that you bring that up, because that's kind of like what it is to kind of sometimes feel if you're queer and go into like a public space sometimes, like you go into a bar like he did, and you're like, oh man, am I the only queer person in this bar? Or going to shop at Walmart or Target, whatever. It's, you know, some people who are queer individuals, they might feel that way, you know, feel very unsure of like, is it safe? So I think a lot of, he's not the only one. I feel like a lot of these characters, because they are the quote unquote misfits, they might feel that way in this series going into public spaces. That's why Rita, obviously, she's so insecure. So I think all of these characters share a common factor of feeling that insecurity in different ways, you know? So it's just like everyone can relate to each other, and despite their insecurities being something different.
I love that, because I think we've seen throughout history that superheroes have really been, especially superhero team-ups, have been kind of an allegory for different groups that have had basically systematic disadvantages in society. So whether it's race-based or gender, sexuality-based. So having that introduced as a little part of this, but having it just a tease.
In the pilot.
Yeah, I like it. I hope we'll see some positive things from Mr. Negative.
Absolutely. I love it.
I love it. And talking too a little bit about his relationship with Rita, because, you know, Rita even says at one, basically whichever one of them is all hands on deck for something, the other one is like, yes. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense because they've been in this home for a very long time together. Yeah. We see that Rita's story starting back in Africa in 1955, she encounters some sort of weird green substance underwater when when she's being a royal bee on set.
You should probably steer clear of strange green substances.
Yeah, just in general, if it's like sparkly and you don't know what's up, like just, you know, just steer away from that. No,
that's not Mountain Dew. Get away from that.
It's a Mountain Don't. Yeah. So this one I thought was really interesting too, because they were talking about the introduction when we had the voice of Mr. Nobody narrating everything, saying, you know, my favorite line of the whole episode, saying, well, critics would call her a poor man's Deborah Kerr, but a rich man's Yvette Vickers. But critics, what do they know? They're going to hate this show anyway. Like, just that line, I was like, oh, I love how immediately meta this is.
Yes, absolutely.
And how it's very tongue-in-cheek, and it's having these
It's very aware of itself, I think.
Yeah, and there's some really dark moments we've already, you know, touched on a little bit, but they do it in a way that you never feel...
It feels like very, it doesn't feel impersonal. It feels very like the way that they're, shout out to the writers for being able to, you know, I think that they're taking risks with the show and the writing, and like, they're like, okay, if someone's going to hate the show, well, so be it. Like, we're going to do what we want to do in our particular voice, in our tone, and we're just going to freaking go all out. And I think that's exactly what they're doing. Just whatever the critics say, you know, like, I haven't read reviews, but I'm here for the pilot, so.
I feel like everybody is pretty on board with this show. I mean, I know I definitely am. I feel like this one is pretty spot on. I mean, the writing, the acting, all of the execution. This was pretty much a perfect pilot. Very much like Lady, a perfect pilot. As long as there's no stowaways, we're good. But yeah, I thought this was interesting, too, that it set up this kind of idea of feeling like a monster and being like a monster, and Rita, before she even transforms into
whatever the blob thing.
I mean, Elasti is kind of a nice way of saying you're a big old blob lady. Like, you turn into a blob. Like, it's gonna be hard for me not to just say blob, but
because I'm not too familiar with the comics, but in the comics, isn't she, you said that she's elastic, like she can stretch?
Yeah, her cells, as we kind of saw here, they kind of come apart and then reconfigure in different ways. Like, this, it's superhero science. It's things that are like, you gotta kind of take it with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. But it's a situation where, it's like an elastic thing where she can change. Because we see in this one when she's... And the store, what ultimately becomes their big downfall, is that she gets huge. And it's this idea of, you know, this bigger, smaller, she can kind of, depending on what her situation is.
So she needs to learn, basically, she needs to learn to harness that elasticity of that she can do, you know. Because, like, my first introduction into Doom Patrol was the Teen Titans on Cartoon Network. And that's, remember when Doom Patrol was actually made it onto the show briefly. I think they did a couple, maybe one or two episodes. And then I remember seeing her, and she was just, she was able to grow, like, without a problem. That was my first introduction into Doom Patrol. So shout out to that. Bring the next season of the animated Teen Titans, by the way. Sorry. Off topic. Continue.
No, you can talk about it because it's amazing. Yeah. And you can get all of it on DC Universe, which is pretty awesome. So there you go. I love that they set up her personality firsthand when we see the one-armed guy pulling focus. Literally pull her focus from the scene. Not what focus puller is supposed to mean. But because... I just spit.
Yes! Now you're making accomplishment.
That because he had one arm, even though the crew loves him and, you know, he's this great guy, she wants him gone. And the crew all hates her. So when she has this accident, nobody immediately rushes to help her because
she was being a bee.
Yeah,
you know, she's like, not kinda, to say it, but she was being
mean. To be like, hey, you deserved this, but not cool, man.
Yeah, she wouldn't have been my first pick to, you know, work for necessarily. Do her lights, her sound, whatever, her photos, you know. But also, it was funny because, like, I feel like this scene reminded me of, like, the Creature from the Black Lagoon a little bit.
It was very Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Instead of the female, the heroine or protagonist, whatever you want to call it, her kind of becoming the monster because of how she was treating everyone, you know? And then she literally physically became a quote-unquote monster, the Blob. So yeah. That's what stood out to me in that scene.
I love this whole concept of monsters and all of these things. And they're like, you know, and even at one point, Niall says, when they're like, you know, there's monsters coming and not one of them is you. Mm-hmm. Like, you are not the true monster here. So it's really playing with this duality of intention and what kind of person you are and your abilities being seen as abilities or as disabilities, depending on the situation. This pilot, man, they just dove into so much. It was so good.
And so far, like, to kind of piggyback off that, we're seeing, like, when they are, quote, like, when they're more human or they look like humans. I mean, some of them are still humans. That's even a question. Are they human? No. But, like, when they, like, their origins, they seem more monsterish when they look ordinary. But when I feel like we're going to see them. When they don't look that ordinary, they are the most human that they've ever been. So they're basically becoming human by becoming a monster or appearing.
Yeah, not human.
Absolutely, yeah.
Humanity is not determinate on actual appearance. Human structure. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't judge. I think they're learning.
Can't judge a book by
absolutely.
Encounter.
I wrote that.
Can't judge a robot by
by his parts. Shell. I don't know. His nuts and bolts.
It's not the metal. It's the the robot underneath.
Absolutely.
So, kind of talking about the hero that looks relatively normal, Crazy Jane, with 64 personas, each with their own power. Which, we were talking a little bit, we both watch Orange is the New Black, so Diane Guerrero, we were like, where is she this season? And now we're like, oh, cool, we get 64 of her. I'm fine. Like, we get basically the whole prison's worth of cast in one person. I'm all right with that.
Yeah, she's probably the character that stood out to me the most so far, just because, one, it's Diane Guerrero, and, like, two, that's her name, right?
Diane Guerrero.
But also, like, I've never seen that actor, portray a character like this so far. Multiple characters, basically. So I'm really excited, and I think she's, so far from what we've seen, she's doing a pretty good job.
Very different from her character. Yeah. Like, I mean, no Sharpie eyeliner to be found anywhere. She's very different than all the Orange is the New Black.
She's making me, sympathize with her. She's also making me hate her. She's also making me want to know more about Crazy Jane.
Yeah, which it's interesting, too, to see her different personalities. What did you think, though, about how they first had Sylvia, but then immediately transitioned to Hammerhead, which is her most aggressive personality. Mm-hmm. We actually saw Hammerhead a couple times in this episode make an appearance. Did you think that it was odd that they went for one of her more aggressive personalities first instead of one of her more sympathetic and saving the more sympathetic with the painting and everything for later? Or do you think it would have had more impact the other way around?
Oh, no, hell no. Well, I like that you bring that up, because I think that we could have been immediately sympathized with her. Like, oh, who is this poor child? But then, like, I like that they kicked it off with a bang. Like, oh, Hammerhead, yes, she's here. But then I think that's what this show might be doing. We're kind of seeing... We're seeing the monstrous side first, and then we're seeing the human. The character that has these emotions, these hearts that we're not... being able to see first and foremost because of their appearance or whatever they're doing. You know, it's kind of like, it's like screwing with us a little bit. This episode screwed with us a little bit.
Well, it's interesting too, because Doom Patrol is, the comics have gone over so many different decades and so many different people
iterations,
working on it. So many different iterations. And this one was very like Grant Morrison. Like, you could really, like the Richard Case, you could pick up on those kind of hints. I feel like if it had been switched, it may have changed the tone a little bit.
Yeah. I don't think I would have liked it as much. So I think I like that they did that for Hammerhead, then Sylvia, right?
Yeah. Well, Sylvia, Sylvia a little bit, then Hammerhead, and then later going back to the hangman's daughter.
Okay.
Was the one when she's in the rain and my painting's ruined and everything's ruined.
It's like, oh, we all need an emo moment here and there.
Yeah. MySpace, Crazy Jane, like, which personality? That's the personality you put in your top eight. Like,
oh, absolutely. Bring me back. Bring me back to 2005, right?
Extreme close-up photos of just your eye.
Don't forget the smudged eyeliner.
Oh, yeah.
It. Can't forget it.
She definitely did not forget her smudged eyeliner either. She didn't do it. But we get to see all of this kind of take shape, really, when these guys leave their home. And we know that they've been in this home for so long. Crazy Jane, you know, makes her appearance. She hasn't been with them as much, but that they've grown together for years and years and years and years, at least since 1988 when Cliff is introduced. And then we see all the way up to modern day 2019.
Yeah.
And this is now the first time that they're going to leave the house because
they're all from, yeah, and it just like complicates everything because they're also all from, I think they're, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're all from different time periods,
they're
right?
From, yeah, they're so all that, from different like, time periods going out into the world.
So messy. And so also weird. Like, but it's good that they've been able to kind of like maybe not bond, but be able to get to know each other despite they're coming from different time periods and different backgrounds. I mean, they still probably have their, you know, their misconceptions of everyone, but they are, to me, already seeing like this family of the Doom Patrol,
yeah,
and how they look for, and you already have said they like they go where the other one goes, like there's it's like a true family to me.
I agree. I really like that they're going to keep playing with this family dynamic, and even like families not quite getting along and having, you know, their tiffs and their arguments and their ribbings and everything. But I thought it was really interesting that they were all quoting with him when he leaves that there are mysterious things in this world that bear keeping an eye on, that you're like, so I must go. And it's like, they're all like, okay, whatever. But so we know that he's left before. We know that they've had this opportunity before. What do you think it was this time that just made them spark and decide to, you know what, let's just GTFO. Let's
get out
of here.
It was totally Crazy Jane. Because Crazy Jane has never really like, I don't know. I just feel like this is the moment. This is the time where Crazy Jane is really going to make an impact within the Doom Patrol. So I think maybe this is why it was so different. And I feel like she was the one who was kind of urging everyone to go, too.
Yeah. She definitely knew how to play Rita.
Yeah.
Kind of talking about how, you know, the different time periods and Rita having been this movie star.
Vanity. Very yes. prideful Rita.
And her saying, you know, it's been 60 years that you've seen the world or that they've seen you. Mm-hmm. And Rita even picking into it where she's like, you know, they play on my ego. You're playing on my ego, mm-hmm. but all right, we're going. Larry, come on, we're going.
Yeah, there's only so many rotisserie chickens that you can eat, right?
Man, I don't know about that. I was like, girl, I feel you with those rotisserie chickens. I was like, this is the most connected to a superhero I've felt in a while, because I also eat three rotisserie chickens at a time.
How could you not eat three
blob style?
Three at a time. Like, it's probably impossible not to eat three at a time.
Being a big old lazy blob is my superpower as well. Yes. Sitting at home eating rotisserie chicken. But Rita ends up meeting a fan when she goes to the malt shop.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, this fan tells her that she watched all of her movies because her dad made her, and it was this connection that she feels with her father. But her dad said that Rita got into porn, which is ultimately what makes her fall apart, both emotionally and then literally come apart.
I love that, too. Because this is a world that she's left, and she, you know, wanted to make a mark as a movie star. However, someone or rumor circulated that kind of ruined her image. So I understand why she fell apart physically and emotionally. But I definitely do feel for her, because obviously sex work is still like, you know, looked down as like, you're nothing if you're a sex worker, you know, not
especially the mentality of 1950s.
Yeah. And obviously she's not a sex worker herself, but like that still is something, huge insecurity for her. 'Cause that's the time period that she's from. She's like, oh, this is different, but people are still, people are making lies and rumors about me. So I definitely felt bad
stigma.
For her. Yeah.
That was pretty heartbreaking. Mm-hmm.
How do you even explain that? Like, that was 60 years ago, and like Rita looks exactly the same. I mean,
yeah, that's what I thought was so interesting too. When she's like, "You even sound like Rita. Like, you look so much like her." It's, yeah, I loved that. I just thought that was really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. That while that's happening, simultaneously we see Robot Man kind of coming apart because Jane lets him know that Clara is alive, mm-hmm. and he ends up breaking the phone, mm-hmm. and then as his heart breaks too.
Damn. This is insane. Is this show going to do this to us, like, week after week?
I think so, man. Like,
I mean, I was pretty shocked that she was still alive because I thought that they were setting it up as, or maybe they are still going to set it up as, like, Jane kind of becoming, like, a daughter figure to Cliff, in a sense. Or Cliff being a father figure, if that's a better way of wording it. But there's something about that connection that stood out to me between those two. Like, yeah, I don't know.
She calls Dr. Calder daddy. And, like, I mean, yeah. they call him the chief. And, like, she's, you know, like... the mm-hmm. daughter of, but it does seem like Cliff is kind of having almost like a surrogate daughter,
yeah,
like almost a replacement Clara,
yeah, but which, or he just wants to help her, you know, yeah. something's got to be there between those two.
It does feel like a very paternal type yeah. deal though, where it's, we saw how close he was with his daughter, like even though he was pretty messed up and not great with his wife, but
yeah, but this, like, is his second chance, this is yeah. all their second chances, you know,
and his wife was,
she was no gem. She was no gem. They weren't.
No gem herself. She was the best. Grabbing the junk of your, like, manager while you're in the car racing. It's like, okay, calm down. Calm
Dysfunctional,
down.
Dysfunctional, to put it lightly.
So yeah, I just thought all of this, especially this scene, this fight scene, just this little premise of, or the little preview of what we're gonna see probably to yeah. come of, you know, the blob coming out and then Jane turning into this giant and igniting fire. And he's like, what are we going to do? We're not going to do that. Like, get down and then end up picking up the concrete to save the school children. Mm-hmm. Just having these little things where they're kind of realizing their power, but at the same time, in that moment, they're having to basically just do damage control yeah. for what they have unleashed on the town.
Yeah.
And then the inner cut of Niles telling them, you know, like, this is really bad. And then be like, it's not that bad. And the TV coming up being like, bad does not even begin to describe it. Like, just the editing on this, yeah. I thought was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. It reminded me of so much of, like, reality television, how, like, a certain scene is going one way. In real life, it's, like, going this way, but they're going to edit you. Or, like, it's, like, so meta. Like, the show, the reporters are just, like, editing it to make them seem like bad guys, some, like, villains, so it's just a mess, and I definitely feel for them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even at this point, they don't really know that much. They're just, like, a robot man lifted mm-hmm. up the street to stop the blob, you know. Like,
ordinary day in the DC universe, I suppose, right?
Poor little Rita's flesh blob just flopping over. I want to go home now. I thought this was really, really interesting. And just that whole idea of the monsters and what is a monster and what that really stands for. Because even Niles is like, okay, at this point, we got to run. We just got to cut tail and run. And the first question is, okay, well, what about the people in the town? And he's like, the town isn't my concern. And just all of them having this idea of, like, no, we have this intrinsic need to, if we have brought any sort of things, if you are saying that there are consequences to our actions, then the responsible thing isn't to run. It's to stand mm-hmm. up, and it's to fight, and it's to try to vanquish these enemies.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool that it was Robot Man who made that stance, and then they all left. And then it was Jane who ultimately kind of convinced them to come back. That was the only part that I was like, well, this was pretty quick that you guys changed your mind and turned around and went and got him. Like, it was just kind of like, you guys think we should go back? Yeah.
I don't know. Something about that Jane is just very, like,
she's persuasive. Yeah, Jane.
Exactly. Like, is she the leader? Like, I'm so confused. What the heck?
I'm interested to see all of Jane's personalities, too, because so far we've seen four in mm-hmm. this first episode, but only a couple that we really, like,
yeah.
even stayed on for too long. So 64 of them. I hope they all make an appearance.
Oh, my gosh. Giving me Split vibes already. Like, how can you compete with?
I'm like, man, they're just pushing for that Emmy for Diana Guerrero already. You play 64 characters in one show. This was kind of cool, too, the way that they did the special effects for it when she would change personalities, how they would have that almost, like, Donnie Darko-esque mm-hmm. morph effect over so that you would know
yeah.
that it was an actual yeah. superhero type thing, not just...
Yeah, you need that visual indicator. Yeah, like, you know, and I think, like, the effects are getting really good from this. I don't know, the streaming service is really stepping it up. So I feel like their effects are getting already with, like, even just seeing Rita, it's so disturbing seeing her melt. And but I'm like, oh my god, these effects are effective. I think that's what they are. They're disturbing, but they're effective.
They're effect effects. Effective effects. Oh, I like gosh. It.
So good. So
effective.
Good.
Yeah, I speaking of effects too, at the end when the white donkey comes out and farts his green smoke that just has Morden's message that the mind is the limit. And I'm like, that donkey just fart, the mind is the limit. Like, what is this show? This is the note that we're ending on.
Am
it's
I
like,
on acid right now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then just the little tease of, okay, well, we see Morden show up and we see his fragmented consciousness, you know, make some reference to Paraguay. So we know that Niles Calder and he got up to something back in the 40s when things got all crazy for him.
Mm-hmm.
But having him then narrate and being like, yes, they were indeed doomed. Like, they were quite doomed. And then having the little street tornado. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to see where this is gonna go.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's going to be him narrating the whole time,
mm-hmm.
or if it's gonna switch up the format. I really, really liked the way this one was formatted.
Yeah, because I would be fine if he's the one narrating, but maybe, like you said earlier, maybe if it's the episode focused on a particular character, everyone gets their own like episode, maybe that person's gonna be like the narrator for the episode, so they could
potentially,
either way I'm totally fine with it, you know, they definitely have options and we all love options.
Alan Tudyk kicking it off I thought was the perfect choice because mm-hmm. he is phenomenal in this role. Everything he does is phenomenal. He was phenomenal in Moana and he was a chicken that made chicken noises, so it's like, of course.
Oscar award winning chicken sounds.
Legit though. Snubbed. I'm like,
snubbed. Just saying.
This is one that I cannot wait to see more of. Mm-hmm. And seeing, too, this is a really interesting one to look at, even from an acting dynamic to look at, because there are several characters that are played by multiple people, like Brendan Fraser and Riley Shannon, both working together, where one of them is doing the physicality and Brendan doing the voice. And same thing with Matt Bomer and Matthew Zook, who are doing Negative Man's persona. It's really, really cool to see how they're able to not let these restrictions affect their performance. It's like they're perfectly synced.
Yeah.
I think it's just really, really, I mean, just shout out to the cast. Shout out to everybody who worked on this episode.
Because, you really don't see that dual performance lately. Or, like, you don't see that in your everyday. It makes sense for maybe, like, a superhero-esque show. But, like, that's not something that is very common at all.
Yeah, it's neat because the show seems to have a lot of practical effects, like with the CGI, but it doesn't detract.
Yeah, like, but that's fascinating from like an actor's like a point of view. How do you work alongside another actor for one particular character? You know,
yeah, so it's very much like Star Wars, like Ray Park as Darth Maul, versus, you know, like the Ray. I've really liked everything about this episode. I'm excited for the rest of the series.
No, totally.
And before we dive into little predictions, do you have any last thoughts on this episode?
Rita girl, no more blob. I mean, I feel like that blob is here to stay, but I really hope that she is able to, you know, harness her powers along with everyone else.
Get it together, but like, literally.
This particular episode was such a S-H-I-T show, but I was here for it every minute, and I hope it gets even messier with each and every single episode this season.
I agree wholeheartedly. I just think this was absolutely phenomenal, and kind of talking a little bit about their cursing, they're perfectly placed in. There was no F Batmans in this. Like, it was like everyone was on board. Everything was just perfectly written. I thought it was great. I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. So let's talk about what we think is going to happen next.
Oh gosh. Ugh.
Now you're after Buzz.
Oh god. Here we go.
So I'll kick it off a little bit. What do you think is going to happen? Because we talked about the family dynamic that they've already established, and we have such a great connection with all of these characters. We haven't seen Cyborg yet.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is going to be coming in next episode or later on? And how do you think that's going to affect the dynamic?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I feel like Cyborg, I don't think he's going to come next episode. I feel like that's too, Cyborg's such an iconic character. You can't really introduce him that early because I feel like we need to know a little bit more about our characters a little bit more. Maybe episode 3 Cyborg can come in. But after everything that happened in the episode 1, the pilot, like I feel like there needs to be some kind of repercussions before we get another character. Because we already have, like, we introduced, like, 5 characters already, right?
There's a lot of wounds to Calderize.
Yeah. But, and I just feel like...
Miles called the reference, you're welcome.
And I just feel like something about Crazy Jane, everyone, she's very persuasive, but I feel like she's gonna, like, cause a rift somehow, you know? There's something about her that's, like, I love her, but something about her is gonna just... ruin something, you know. Ooh. I don't want to predict that, but I am predicting that.
I like that.
And I feel like Cliff and Cyborg, when they do meet, I feel like they can relate to one another. But however, Cliff is going to be jealous of Cyborg because Cyborg is still like appears as a human a little bit, so he's just gonna be like, he's gonna be a hater. So that's what I'm predicting so far.
It is going to be interesting to see how those two characters relate in particular, because it's like, wait, so we have basically two robot men.
Absolutely. That's like, why I'm like they have to have some
cyborg
an interesting interaction between those two throughout the season.
I wonder. I think you might be right. I mean, I felt like they were probably going to introduce them next episode just to be like, all right, we're using the first couple episodes just to get the cast established, but maybe not. It'll be interesting to see if maybe he comes in later on.
Yeah.
I think we'll get some more about Crazy Jane's backstory and where she's been. Because we know she's been gone and now she's back. Yeah. And she kind of pops in and out. So I think we'll probably uncover some skeletons in her closet. Because right now...
literally probably actual skeletons.
Probably actual skeletons.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I'm interested, too. I think that they're going to have a little bit more of that dynamic of her being kind of like a substitute Clara, almost, in Robot Man's eyes and Cliff's eyes. His big red eyes.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I feel like Cliff, he's kind of going to be that one to, hopefully, I would like to think, help Crazy Jane be able to, like, get her personalities in order, or just for her personalities to be able to work in tandem with each other, you know, to be able to, like, okay, I could do Hammerhead in this particular moment, and we'll see them be able to shift. That's so I'm really excited. I hope that happens, you know, because you can't just, like, have your personalities come here and there, like, when unwarranted, you know.
Yeah, it feels less superhero if you can't control your powers.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's, I think, kind of the big establishment of this one, is that it's what makes them feel like such outsiders, is that, you know, the big three, the Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman type, their whole thing is that they embody their power and know how to use it, whereas these guys are just kind of figuring it out, and Calder hasn't really, I mean, he's not really like Professor X, he doesn't teach these guys, like, he's just like, yeah, we're all alive and we can chill, but... they have no idea how to harness their power. So it's going to be interesting to see how they all kind of team up and help each other.
Yeah.
Because even the concept of leadership has kind of been...
I know. It's kind of like, I don't even know who the leader is. Like, yeah. Like, I feel like we have an idea of a leader, but do we?
And we love the villain already. Like, we're getting the villains. Like,
are we going to be rooting for the villain?
Yeah, like, what? A little bit. Like, you're like, oh, they're all just a little bit fragmented. Like, it's all unity and pieces broken up.
But you know, I'm here for this, though. This is why I like the episode so much.
I love this show. I'm so excited to get to talk about it some more with you guys. Talk about it more with you guys at home, too. So be sure to leave us comments, rate, subscribe, give us those thumbs up. We're on iTunes, Twitter, SoundCloud. We're all over the place.
Spotify. Hell yeah.
We've got some great other shows, too, that you guys should check out as well. And in the meantime, where can everybody keep up with you?
Hey, everyone. I am Ollie Drennan. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer. You can check me out on Sundays for the RuPaul's... well, it is Sunday today. But check me out on Sundays for the RuPaul's Drag Race after show on AfterBuzz TV at 5 p.m.
Awesome. And I'm Elena Jordan. You can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan, on Instagram at Elena J. Jordan. You can find me back here. I'll be on the Crashing After Show tomorrow, and Russian Doll as well. A really cool one. I will not be here next week because I will be in Hawaii for Amazing Comic-Con Aloha. Tickets are on sale now. Whoop, whoop. If you're going to be in Honolulu next week, then come hang out with me. Come find me. we'll talk about Doom Patrol. So we'll catch you guys next week. Love ya.
Bye.
See ya later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.